Hello, and welcome to this concise medical minute presentation on considerations when starting an opioid, patient and provider shared responsibilities. This program is provided by Clinical Care Options in partnership with the American Academy of Physical Medicine and Rehabilitation, Practicing Clinicians Exchange, and ProCE. It is supported by an independent educational grant from the Opioid Analgesic REMS Program Companies. I'm Dr. Eric Shaw, Chair of the Opioid Task Force, as well as Medical Director of the Shepherd Spine and Pain Institute in Atlanta, Georgia. Today, we're going to be discussing factors that should be carefully considered when starting an opioid for chronic pain, discussing patient and provider responsibilities, as well as a detailed patient-provider agreement, and giving the patient's perspective on these responsibilities. These are the things that we should consider carefully when starting an opioid. Rationale: what is the purpose? What are we trying to achieve? What's been tried in the past? Over-the-counter analgesics, massage, physical therapy, home exercise program, and other opioids or other pain medications that have been tried in the past. Risk assessment: this should be done at the onset of opioid prescribing as well as continuously throughout the prescribing process. We need to establish functional goals. What are we trying to get the patient to do more of, more easily, whether that be home exercise, ADLs, work, family activities? And then we'll need to establish a regular follow-up routine at interval. The prescriber-patient agreement sets forth expectations on patient-clinician responsibilities, including the rationales for opioid therapy, responsibilities of the clinician in prescribing opioids, responsibilities of the patient in using opioids, potential adverse events. This should also reflect patient literacy, including available options for low-literacy English language version, which has been developed and validated. This should be signed after the assessment, but before actually beginning the opioids. Let's meet Maria. She's a 50-year-old plumber. She owns her own business. She has right-sided neck and shoulder pain. She had a car accident 10 years ago, but the pain began in earnest about 3 years ago. She discontinued ibuprofen because of a stomach ulcer. She's currently taking acetaminophen 5 grams a day and hydrocodone 7.5/325 up to 5 times a day. She's referred by her primary care doctor who no longer feels comfortable prescribing hydrocodone for her. Hi, Maria. How are you?
Yeah, I guess hanging in there best I can. It's been frustrating.
So tell me what's going on.
Well, I'm still dealing with this neck and the shoulder pain, and that's why my doctor sent me to you, hoping that, I'd find a solution.
Is it all in the neck, or is it go into the arms at all? Or
it's mostly in the neck, but I do get it all in my right shoulder sometimes.
What kind of work do you do?
I'm a plumber. I own my own business.
Okay. So you're reaching and crawling a lot. So is this pain there all the time? Is it interfering with home activities too, or just work?
Yes. At this point, it's pretty much 24/7 that I'm dealing with. And yeah, it's affecting my business, and it's affecting at home with my family, the activities that we want to do.
Okay. So what kinds of treatments have you had, both medication as well as maybe injections, in the last couple of years?
Medication, I have the hydrocodone. I take acetaminophen. I've done injections. Yeah. In the past, I've done that. And there's been some drug GABA something, but I'm not on that anymore.
Mm-hmm. So the injections that you had, were those in the neck or in the hip or what?
In the neck.
Were they with steroid or without steroid?
It had steroid. I know that.
And was there image guidance used, like an x-ray or an ultrasound, or was it just a needle into the neck painful area?
I don't know about that. I don't think there was any x-ray involved.
Okay. Can you tell me how much hydrocodone you're taking right now?
I take 2 to 3. I wish I could take more because it's only lasting 2 hours.
Do you know the strength of it?
Oh, I think it's 7.5.
Okay. And how much Tylenol are you taking on top of that?
I pretty much take that around the clock. That's like maybe 5 times a day. I take the 2 caplets.
Is it the extra strength?
Yes.
So that's 1,000 milligrams of Tylenol 5 times a day plus 2 to 3 hydrocodone with Tylenol in it. So I just want to let you know that the recommended maximum dose of long-term Tylenol use is 3 grams or 3,000 milligrams. And you're taking with 3 hydrocodone and 5,000 milligrams of over-the-counter acetaminophen, you're taking almost 6 grams a day, 6,000 milligrams. So that's twice. So I really want you to cut back on the over-the-counter acetaminophen to either three times a day or two times a day or one caplet rather than two, four times a day, because really you're putting your liver in risk. Has anybody checked your blood labs recently?
No.
Okay. So we'll need to do that when you come in the office next week, or you can talk to your primary care doctor about ordering that. Okay. Because we just need to check it and make sure that it's okay.
Okay. Yeah. Nobody have ever explained that to me before.
So what level is your pain?
What level? I don't know. Bad. I'm only getting to work like 4 hours a day at this point, trying to manage the pain.
Okay. Is it affecting your sleep and?
My sleep, my movement, my mood.
Have you had any x-rays or MRIs done in the last year or two?
I haven't had that in the last year now.
Okay. So I think it sounds like, you know, you really suffer from around the clock chronic pain, right? 24/7. It's affecting sleep, mood, home life, work life, and really functionally limiting you, right? So what we want to do through various different means is to improve that quality of life for you. So I think maybe the first thing I would do is kind of consider starting you on a long-acting opioid that's 24/7. Based on Health and Human Services guideline pain management report that came out in May 2019. So Health and Human Services is a cabinet position underneath the president of the United States, and they oversee the CDC as well as Medicare and Medicaid services. They recommend a drug called buprenorphine. So buprenorphine is a little unique in the opioid world in that it doesn't have a potent activity on the likability or the euphoria that opioids cause. And the negative effects of opiates like depression and apathy is also actually blocked. So when we talk about safety, this is the safest drug in terms of risk of abuse and addiction. In addition, because it's got a very limited compromise to your respiratory ability, all opiates will compromise your respiratory drive a little bit because it blunts or blocks the response of the brainstem to carbon dioxide building up, meaning you're not breathing enough. So morphine, hydrocodone, methadone, oxycodone, all those drugs, as you go up on the dose, it makes it harder and harder for your brain to breathe stronger to get rid of the extra carbon dioxide. Buprenorphine, conversely, will do it a little bit, but even as we go up on the dose, it never gets more than that little bit. Safest opiate in terms of risk of respiratory compromise. So if we looked at a drug that's going to be very powerful, safe, essentially eliminate the risk of addiction and abuse, this is the drug that we would choose. And so it comes in a couple formulations for chronic pain. And we'll talk about that when you come in next week. You know, you haven't been engaged in formal pain management before, but within the context of prescribing long-acting opiates, it's really important that we have an agreement between us about each of our roles and responsibilities with this medication. And that includes my responsibility to prescribe it for you, to keep you informed and safe and monitor and track side effects, and also for your responsibility not to do illicit substances, drink alcohol, and other CNS or central nervous system depressants like sedatives, not to trade the medication, sell it, use it inappropriately. So this is just an agreement that maybe you haven't signed before, but that's really important in formal pain management.
Okay. Because, I mean, I got to sign something about that?
Yeah, because this is a long-acting medication that's around the clock in your system. And because of that, there's deemed to be higher risk. Now, specifically with buprenorphine, as we just talked about, it's the safest option that we have and actually probably safer than hydrocodone. But because it's a long-acting medication, not a short-acting, meaning it's going to be in your system 24 hours and not, you know, for a couple hours, this is a responsibility that we have to sign. What we're going to be tracking is your functional improvement, meaning working more, better home life activities, better able to be with your family and do things on the weekends and off time. So we're going to be tracking that together. Now, it doesn't mean you have to stop the hydrocodone. It just means that you should potentially take less, but with greater benefit, meaning you'll take two or three a day and hopefully down to one or zero, but you'll be doing better throughout the day because this patch or this buccal film that we'll be prescribing will be in your system 24 hours and helping to lower the pain so that you don't need as much hydrocodone.
Okay, so I can start lowering. I won't have to take the hydrocodone as much once I get the new med.
Hopefully, eventually you won't be able to take, you won't need any. So what we're going to do is we'll start you on the lowest dose of this medication, the buprenorphine, for the first month, and we'll sign the agreement. And then we'll follow you monthly and we'll track your improvement, your work, your ability to work and sleep and home life. And we'll track that. And as that gets better, as we go up on the dose, we'll find the dose that you need to kind of maintain that function, right? So when you came in originally a couple of weeks ago, you filled out a form called the COM or the concomitant opioid misuse measure because you're already taking hydrocodone. And that your score on that was a 4. And anything under 8 indicates that you're very low risk. So you've already indicated the hydrocodone is not lasting more than a couple hours, but you're still not taking more than you're prescribed. So that, in addition to this questionnaire, indicates to me that you're pretty low risk, okay? And so I'm comfortable with starting this long-acting opiate for you. So we'll bring you in next week to sign the agreement and to start the medication. My office will be in contact with you today or tomorrow.
Okay, appreciate it. Thanks.
Okay, Maria. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Let's review the key takeaways from our case. The rationale for considering opioids for Maria is that she's worsened over time despite conservative care. She's definitely got functional and quality of life disability that has interfered with her overall quality of life. She has tried ibuprofen, acetaminophen, hydrocodone, gabapentin, steroid injections, as well as home exercise program, all without significant long-lasting benefit. The risk assessment, her COM score was quite low. However, her acetaminophen dosing was high. So we discussed that in the telehealth appointment, warning her and educating her on the risk of taking too much acetaminophen over time. We discussed the functional goals, looking for at least a 50% improvement, ability to perform some plumbing work, and many, if not all, of her home life activities and needs. Plan follow-up at the next visit, which we scheduled soon. We'll do the patient-provider agreement. We'll look at the prescription drug monitoring database, the PDMP. We'll get a urine screen, and we'll review the goals so that she can keep track of them. We'll see her monthly and consider physical therapy and perhaps injection therapy after the pain begins to improve. Initiation of opioid therapy must be done with care. We must be sure to set realistic functional goals. These will be different for all patients given their functional and medical comorbidities. We'll use a patient-provider agreement to spell out the patient and the provider's responsibilities in prescribing opiates. We'll reassess the need for injection therapy and physical therapy on an ongoing basis. And we'll also perform an ongoing risk assessment, which is critical. This should be done on a quarterly and semi-annual basis. We'll also give consideration for titrating the long-acting opiates with care. These will have the same goals and concerns that we would have for short-acting opiates. For more information about what is currently available and what is coming, visit opioidremseducation.com. Thank you so much for taking the time.